Welcome to the second edition, the second podcast of With Students in Mind. My name is Matt Townsley, and I am a math educator in Solon, Iowa. I blog at MetaMusings, mctownsley.net, and my co-host is...
Russ Garand. I am Russ. I am a sixth grade language arts and social studies teacher at Waukee Middle School in Waukee, Iowa. I blog at russgarand.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Russ Garand.
You got it. All right, Russ, welcome back. Let's see, a couple of things that are new since our first podcast is we now have a few more resources for our listeners to connect with us. We have our blog at withstudentsinmind.blogspot.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at withstudentsim. Let's see, personally and kind of professionally, what's happened to you, Russ, since our first podcast?
Personally and professionally, I don't know, not much. We had a chance as a few people from our staff had a chance to go visit Van Meter High School the other day on Monday. Great experience for everybody. Principal and assistant principal went along. Our instructional coach went along, also six or seven teachers. It was a great experience. Van Meter is one of, I think, 10 or 12 schools in Iowa that have a one-to-one computer curriculum, and they also have a full-room virtual reality machine, which was just crazy. I don't think you and I have had a chance to talk about that. Pretty ridiculous.
No, not at all.
Basically fully run by students. There aren't any teachers that are in charge of it. There's just two students that we got to meet that are amazing. Just the opportunities for them with that were just kind of crazy. We'll have to dedicate some time to that at a future show. Didn't really plan on that tonight. So, besides that, went to our second week of baby birthing class last night.
Nice.
Things are getting close. We have 4 weeks. 4 weeks from this past Monday to go until the due date. But what I'm hearing is due date's not quite written in stone, I guess. It's kind of what I'm finding out. 5%. Yeah. 5% of parents, or 5% of babies are born on their due date.
Only 5%?
I couldn't believe it either. They went around the room and had us kind of guess what we thought it would be. For some reason, Becky was educated on that already, and she guessed 3%.
Oh, wow.
Or she guessed 5. Yeah, okay, I'm being corrected here. She guessed 5. It was 3 to 5%, so she was within the statistical range, I guess, within one standard deviation or whatever.
So. Nice. That I would never have guessed that. I wouldn't either.
I was going to guess something in the 40s or something like that. But, yeah, so February 8th is when she's due, but I'm expecting baby G to come a little bit sooner.
Hey, looking forward to it. By the next time, by the third episode here, I'm sure we'll have, good conversation to share about that. That'll be a big life change for you.
Definitely. Yeah. How about you, Matt? What's been going on with you?
Oh, obviously Christmas break has come and go. We're back at it. Since we're in a 4x4 block schedule, we're getting ready to start our second semester next week. So that's going to mean all new students, which means all new opportunities to try out all kinds of neat things. I'm going to try out some binary grading in statistics class to start out. 0 for you didn't do it, 1 for you did do it, and to see kind of how that goes. The thing I'm really looking forward to is the way it's going to connect with communicating with parents so that parents can explicitly see, is my kid doing it or not? So I think I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to getting together face-to-face with a few other teachers in my building. We've had lots of good virtual conversations with them, and just looking forward to making some changes in their room and learning from them. It's going to be an exciting time to kind of change things up with new students and build upon all the things that I've learned this last semester in the last 5-plus years.
Nice. So. I know one other celebration we could mention, well, celebration, whatever, is your brother, my brother-in-law, Eric, is trying to work out some standards-based grading in his classroom as well this semester.
Oh, my. He sent me some screenshots of his grade book already. Oh, wow. He That guy is well prepared.
Only
and,
nerds send around screenshots of grade books.
Yes. But I'm telling you, he's doing it. He's doing it right, and he's doing all the right things. Talking to administrators, getting all the parent communication done up front. I mean, I think he's really coming in really well prepared, really well researched, and I think we're going to be able to all learn from him to learn from kind of how it works out from a experienced teacher perspective with some Algebra 2 students. So that is definitely something to celebrate. So
definitely, it'd be nice to see if we can set him up as a guest sometime, talk about how that's working out for him. It'd be nice to kind of find out as things are moving.
Yeah, you bet. Well, let's move right into the rest of the show here. Our format is going to be the same as episode one. We're first going to have our one of the 1, 2, 3, and that's going to be one thing that we can teach you. And the second thing is going to be the two perspectives. Today we're going to talk about student responsibility and perhaps the what's becoming our most famous component of WSIM here is the student responsibility. Oh, excuse me. No, not student responsibility, but number three, the three-minute gut check. We're kind of making our name for ourselves at that area, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, I got a good one for you.
All right, well, I hope you're ready for hope you're ready for me being not ready or ready, however it turns out.
All
so,
right.
Russ, why don't you start us off with one thing we can teach you. Tell us a little bit about DGO today.
All right, we are going to teach you real quickly about DGO. That's D-I-I-G-O. And DGO is a combination of a website and either a toolbar or just a bookmarklet that sits up in your tool in your bookmarks toolbar. So, DGO is first a website, and it's a social bookmarking website. The idea behind social bookmarking is basically the real idea is that what you find important enough to bookmark might be worthwhile for someone else to check out. So instead of me holding on to all my bookmarks in my browser, I can bookmark things and have them out publicly that other people can look through and see if they might find it interesting as well. That's basically the idea of social bookmarking. You can make connections with people through it. One thing that I can do is I'll bookmark something and then I'll go on to DGO and find out who else has bookmarked that same site, and then I can look through their bookmarks. If we have that one site in common, maybe we've got some other things in common. Maybe they've got some things that I haven't noticed before. So that's kind of really how social bookmarking works. Now, what DGO does to extend that is when you install either a toolbar in Firefox, or if you just drag what's called a bookmarklet, it just looks like a bookmark, but it kind of adds some functionality to your browser. If you install that bookmarklet in your bookmarks, then anytime you click that bookmark, you are able to edit. Well, edit's not the right word. You're able to highlight or add sticky notes, annotate, really, the web. So let's talk quick about some ways that we've used it, Matt, professionally. Matt and I are in a group together where, and his brother Eric is also in that group, and then a friend of ours, Michael Cackley, that's Concrete Cax on Twitter. We're in a group together where we just share bookmarks between each other. And what we do then is, if we find them interesting enough, we'll spend some time adding highlights to them, highlight certain passages that really stick out to us, maybe throw a sticky note on there and kind of go back and forth and discuss things on that sticky note. Anything you want to add about the way that group works for us?
Yeah, what I really appreciate about it is, you know, pre-DGO, you and I would email each other, you know, hey, here's a great post or here's a great news story. I read this part of it. What do you think? Now with DGO, you can share what you thought in context. I mean, you can go on there and highlight, you know, here was the main point and here's what I thought about it. Here's kind of a sub point down here and what I thought about it. And I can respond to you, you know, by doing a sticky note right in context right there. And of course, the great part about it with all the new, you know, RSS web 2.0s capabilities, it will just email me at the end of the day and let me know what the updates are to all of those shared bookmarks. So I really appreciate the context part of it. You don't have to go back and try to like go back to the link, figure out what it was, see what you had to say. It's just right there. It's all together. And of course, there's the neat part about it too, that that sharing capability is just amongst all of us. We have the capability of sharing it with the world or just sharing it amongst our little group. So I think it's a great tool. It's one of those tools that I was definitely leery of right away. I was like, come on, what? How would that benefit me?
Right.
But once I got into it, wow! There's no going back. It's more than just social bookmarking. It's sharing in context. I'm not really as familiar with maybe, and Russ, hopefully you can share a little bit about that with our listeners, is what are the possibilities of this tool in the classroom with our students?
Great segue, Matt. On Friday, I'm actually bringing our laptop carts into my classroom, and so I'm really excited about this. I've got one of the great things about DIGO is that it was started by an educator, and they're extremely supportive of educators. So if you get a teacher account, which is free, all of this is free, we should mention that. If you get a teacher account, then you can create student accounts. And these student accounts don't have personally identifiable information, and they don't require email addresses. So you can use them with students that are under the age of 13. That's one of the big things for me, because all of my students are under 13. So on Friday, I've got the laptops coming in, and I've got student usernames and passwords ready for my kids. And what I've done is I've put them all together. At first, I was going to split up the classes, but I thought, well, this is kind of the point. So I'm going to put them all just in one big group, and we're going to be studying. We're starting a poetry unit. And so I've added some poetry links to our language arts group. And then the kids are going to get online, and they'll go to those different bookmarks, and they'll read critically, and they'll respond to questions that I've strategically placed on those links. You know, there might be a haiku, and I'll ask, what do you think about this line? Or, well, how does this line reflect the earlier line? Or, you know, what are your thoughts about this type of poetry? And so they're able to read critically, respond, and again, like you said, it's all in context. And the thing that I'm really excited about is that we don't have a ton of access in my school. I'm going to be able to get the laptops every Friday, but kids can go home. It's not something that's linked to a certain physical computer. They can go home. They can install it on their home machine, log in. They can keep doing, keep reading, keep responding. The conversation does not have to stop once the bell rings. That's what I love about it.
What about privacy? I mean, usually when you think about blogging or wikis, you think about, you know, will this information be shared with the world? How will that, you know, will the information that you and your students are going back and forth with, will that be shared with the world, or what would that look like?
Great, great question, Matt. It is all private, just with us. My kids, basically my students, don't exist to the DIGO community. They only exist within our group. They can only communicate with other students that I've created, and I am privy to any information that they put out there, any bookmarks that they make, any comments that they write, you know, all of that stuff. I can see all of that stuff happening, which is great. And the thing that I really like about it is that it sets them up for the future. It's not just a reading skill. It's also an organizing skill, because, you know, when my kids, my six-year-olds get to college, there's just no denying it. They're going to be on computers. That's how they're going to be researching. Yep. And so this helps them to begin to learn how to organize information on the internet. We're learning how to tag, tag entries so that we can find them again later on. You know, they're learning how to communicate over the internet in that asynchronous manner.
You talked about tagging. I kind of wonder if tagging is going to be kind of like a new skill. You know what I'm saying? Like,
definitely.
I think about the old, you know, kind of the old school creating index cards for research papers, that type of thing. You know, creating DIGO bookmarks is kind of like creating an index card, but with the added addition of tagging them.
Yep.
Do you see a benefit for your students there?
I do. And, you know, the thing is, it really is just a new application of an old skill. And I think this is something that you'll latch on to, Matt. It's an old Bloom skill. I mean, it's analysis. It's right there in the middle of Bloom's, and they have to analyze this site. Now, what is going to help me remember this? You know, what is it about this site that I can tag to help my brain find it later on? And that's what comes with analysis. So, yeah, I think it's a great tool. This is something that DIGO's co-founder, Maggie Tsai, we've been in contact for a while. She's great. And it's something that she and I have talked about is basically what DIGO is taking all these things that we already do offline we teach kids when they research. We give them a highlighter. We give them sticky notes. We tell them write in the margins, you know, scribble some notes yourselves. That's what we do with paper. And DIGO gives kids the ability, and adults, gives everyone the ability to do that online. It's great. I think I'm a huge DIGO evangelist. I mean, I think it's amazing.
Sure. Make a quick wrap here on this session. I think two things I want to end here with. One is I want to throw a plug in for you on the old Classroom 2.0 Saturday sessions a while back. You and Maggie were co-leading a session on DIGO, so maybe we could put a link to that on our blog.
Yep.
And as people could listen or, you know, recap that. And the second thing is I really think, you know, there's a lot of information literacy talk out there, you know, what's reliable, what's not reliable. This tool itself has just amazing capabilities for helping students start to, as you said, analyze and synthesize information. I think it's really a tool that's just, even though it seems so great now, I really think it's just kind of getting started. It's only going to get better. It's a great tool, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again in the future here.
Definitely. We'll add some links to the show notes with some things that we put together. There's a lot of good stuff for how to get started with DIGO online, and so we'll put a bunch of that stuff in the notes. Let's move on to perspectives. We're going to be talking about student responsibility tonight. I feel like I did a bunch of the talking there, Matt, so let's start with the high school perspective. Here are the questions that we're going to be thinking about. How much responsibility can we expect of our students? We all think they should come to class every day with their supplies. They magically come in for extra help when they don't understand something, and they turn in their assignments without any reminders, right? That's what you get at high school, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So when should students get this? Is it 6th grade, 12th grade, 1st grade, college? What are we expecting too much of our students too early? Are we not expecting enough? What are you thinking?
Well, I think this has just been something that's been on my mind quite a bit. I mean, you teach 6th grade. Your wife, Becky, my sister, teaches 6th grade. And we all have the same, I don't want to call it complaints, but we all have the same perspective or the same expectations of our students. I mean, hey, you know, they're 6th grade. They should be coming in before school to retake their test or if they need extra help. And I say the same thing in high school. And from my perspective, there are students that get it, they meet this ideal, and there are students that don't. I mean, there are literally students that are going to come in if they have one little question on their math homework, whether it's just, I got this answer and I'm not sure if it's right, or here's the answer that I knew I was supposed to get but I didn't, to students that, you know what, they just don't care. I don't want to say they don't care, but maybe they just don't get it. They just don't get the fact that they need to take responsibility for their own actions. I think there's kind of two perspectives on this amongst educators. One is that we need to expect a lot of our students, and if we expect a lot of them, they'll rise up to the expectations. The other kind of other side of it, the flip side of it, is we need to drag them along, and it's our responsibility because we're teachers to help them learn at all costs. And if that means calling home to their parents and tell them to get in here at 5 o'clock at night to get extra help, or staying till 5 o'clock, or, you know, whatever it is, that's our responsibility. We're the teachers, they're the students, and we're here to drag them along. I don't know. It's a tough one. I can see both perspectives. What are you thinking there, Russ?
Well, one thing I was thinking about while you were saying that, I wonder how much of this is systemic. I mean, we talk about responsibility, but do I need to use air quotes with that? Is it arbitrary responsibility? Is it this system-created responsibility? You know, and I don't know if I can answer that, but one thing I can tell you is I've tried this year to get away from just doing what I tell you to, you know, and trying to get the kids to create their own deadlines, for an example. You know, so instead of saying, we're doing a week-long project, today you have this done, tomorrow you have this one. You know, Wednesday you have this done, Thursday you have this done. I've tried to kind of help them to set their own deadlines, because to me, that's responsibility, whereas following deadlines that I set as the teacher is more compliance, that, you know, that's just doing what I ask of them. And here's the thing, that's life. There is compliance in life. You will have jobs in life where you have to do certain things by certain dates. You know, I have to have my lessons done by certain dates, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but I think that I just don't want to, you know, just hold them. I don't want to hold them back from it's almost like babying. You know, if you don't, if you don't let them fail, you know, if you don't let them miss deadlines, if you don't let them set deadlines and then miss them, they're not going to gain that ability to create their own responsibility.
Sure. The other thing I think of that's so difficult for me, you know, with mandates and so forth, from two perspectives. One thing is like an IEP type mandate, where one of the IEP requirements might be, little interim deadlines. You know, there's this big project, but the IEP states that there must be interim deadlines to help the student achieve that. So that's obviously something we can't get away from. But then there's the other kind of perspective of each student has their own, what I might call, responsibility threshold. And that is that they, you know, some students are, you know, they fit the ideal. Other students are maybe on their way to fitting the ideal. And as a teacher, as a classroom teacher, trying to have the same expectations for all my students, I think is where ultimately the student responsibility piece becomes difficult, or that I get in trouble. Because there are these, you know, 5, 6, 7 students over here that, you know what, they are already capable of making their own deadlines, as you just stated. And then there's these 5 or 6 students over here that need a whole lot of help creating their own deadlines. And I think you're flashing me a book here, the old Wormelli book here. I'm sure you're going to talk about that in a second.
Well, that's just, go ahead, finish.
Fair but not equal, I know. And then there's the middle students that, you know what, with a little scaffolding, they might be next year's super responsible students. And, you know, as much as I think about the question is, how much responsibility should we expect of our students, I'm starting to, you know, based on my 5-plus years of educational experience, and it's not a whole lot in the whole scheme of things, but I kind of wonder if the better question is, here's the ideal, how can we help all students get there? How can I scaffold this middle group to try to become the uber-responsible students? How can I scaffold the 5 or 6 on the low end to try to get to the middle group? And, you know, me as this instant feedback, concrete, math-type thinking person, I admit that my downfall is probably not helping students create their own interim deadlines. And I'm either over here, hey, everyone's creating their own deadlines today, or over here, let me help everyone create their interim deadlines. I don't know. It's kind of a crapshoot sometimes. It's something I'm really working on. Tell me a little bit about what you know, with the fair but not always equal Wormelli reading you've been going through.
Well, I was just thinking, it just made me think about how you're exemplifying that ideal by taking, it's not that everyone has to be at this spot right now, today. It's that, you know, we have mm-hmm. goals for our kids and we're meeting them where they are, you know, and this, we may celebrate a small thing for someone, for one student, mm-hmm. that may be something that another student's already doing. You know, it's just by treating kids fairly, we're not saying that they all have to do the same thing at the same time, you know, in the same pace. And I think you were kind of hitting on that.
Yeah, here's a good example. There's a student in one of my math classes, and she's not the type of person, she's probably one on the low end, she's not really going to take responsibility for her learning. She's just as happy coming to class, not getting it, not asking questions, going home, coming back, same thing every day. I tried a lot of scaffolding to try to get her more involved, try to get her to take responsibility for her own learning. Finally, I just decided, you know what, I'm going to contact the parents and, you know, kind of go overboard with, I'm going to help you. I'm going to try to drag you along here by getting your parents involved at the high school level. And you know what? She has been in my room every day after school for, you know, the past week or so. Here's the neat thing, though. Not that she's there. Here's the neat thing. Because she's there with me one-on-one or two-on-one if her friends are there or somebody else in the room, you know, I have now the opportunity to work with her and now to start that scaffolding experience for her on a personal level. Now she can ask me questions about the math stuff, and I can now ask her questions in return, so that she can now hopefully become more responsible for learning at that kind of micro level. Had this dragging along experience not happened, then we wouldn't have had this one-on-one experience. We've had all kinds of great breakthroughs of her starting to think more on her own as a result of, you know, her parents or me or however you view it, kind of dragging her along. And that's kind of one of those celebrations that you just talked about.
Yep, definitely. Well, I guess I can kind of give you a little bit of a sixth grade perspective, kind of how I see this responsibility issue. One of the big things for me this year is reading that Wormelli book was huge, because those were thoughts as far as grading goes and as far as deadlines go. There are thoughts that I had always had, but kind of that I had pushed back going, well, you know, I'm a first-year teacher, you know. That can't be the right way to do it. I'm not big on grading every single little thing that comes in. I want to give feedback for everything that we do, but I don't feel like every tiny assignment that I give needs to go into the grade book. Sure. You know, and I also don't feel like if a student, you know, if I set a deadline and a student misses that deadline, well, you know, do I dock them 10%? Well, then it doesn't really reflect their learning. And so what's been really hard for my students is, you know, when I tell them, or they just kind of noticed, if you don't turn it in on the day it's due, you're not going to lose points. And so that's really hard for them. They're coming from elementary school where things have been done in class and things just get done on time. And if they don't get done on time, then, you know, there's these big penalties. And so I have a lot of students who are getting behind. And, you know, at first I really started to kind of fret about that. But what I've realized is that it's a chance for them to learn. And so instead of docking them points where they don't really think about the effect, you know, it gives the chance to have that conversation, you know. And I think one of the big, you know, you mentioned talking to parents, and that's one of the big things that I've realized this year too, is that, you know, they're 11 and 12 years old. And so it's something I have to remind myself. I was not a very responsible 11 and 12 year old. That's life.
Yeah.
There aren't very many responsible 11 and 12 year olds. You know, we love it when there are, but there really aren't that many. And so I think what I can do to, like you're saying, work individually with them, and, you know, just keep in contact with the parents, because just the more people that we have modeling for them what responsibility looks like, the better.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they see responsibility when, if they miss a deadline and I email parents, that's, you know, that's modeling responsibility. And so I think they, you know, the more that we can do that, I just think modeling is extremely important at this level.
I think, you know, you brought kind of two things that have been triggering through my mind here. First, going back to something you said earlier about compliance versus responsibility. You know, here's a high school example. End of semester, having students kind of give a quick check-in on this organizational aspect of class where they have to show me that their portfolio, their notebook is organized, and I give them a few points for it. Okay, I'm not bragging that I give points for organization here, but that's a whole other topic. And a couple students that just came, and it's obvious that it's obvious that they didn't even put any time into it. It's like, I've been unorganized the whole time, you know, you haven't been checking in on me, which is my fault to begin with, but then they didn't put in the time to organize it. And they were shocked that I just didn't give them like 2 out of 10 or something. Here's what I said. I said, hey, you obviously haven't put in the time. I said this to them. You got an opportunity tomorrow. You can either come with that organized or you don't get anything. It's like you never did it. And what's responsibility? Responsibility is them coming back tomorrow having done it. It would have been really easy to let them off the hook. And I know we've had this conversation a whole bunch. Responsibility is when the deadline comes, if someone gives you a chance, actually following through with it. And I think that's what comes along with the conversations as well. The other thing, and you mentioned it too, you know, you got 11 and 12 year olds. I got, you know, 15, 14, all the way up to 18 year olds. You know, I think about this. If the state of Iowa says you can't drive on your own until you're 16, I mean, the state says you are not responsible enough to drive on your own until you're this age. Yet at the same time, we have all these huge expectations of our, like, 14-year-olds. You know, you're supposed to get here. You're supposed to remember all your stuff. You're supposed to do all this. Hey, let's face it. That's an ideal. I mean, that's an ideal when the United States of America says you can't vote until you're 18 years old. I mean, there's like this cognitive ability that students have, that humans have, to do things at different ages, and we have to recognize that. And when we don't recognize that, we're having like this adult expectation on 11 and 12 year olds, and that's just absolutely wild. So it's finding that balance and trying to help all students get to the next level.
Yep, I agree. I think.
Do you see any of that kind of happening? You know, I mean, do you see that happening at your level? You know, do your colleagues see these sixth graders as adults, or what sort of scaffolding experiences do you see them having with their students? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think we do a good job in our staff of recognizing, you know, who these kids are and realizing where they're at. And one thing that I learned from a teacher across the hall, who has just been a tremendous help this year, she on her board, on her whiteboard, will write a list of what you need each day. So this is what you're going to need. And, you know, it's a simple thing. And when I first started doing it, I thought to myself, well, why do I have to do this? Why can't the kid, he's got his binder with him. Why can't he just, when I need him to get a piece of paper out, why can't it take 2 seconds to get a piece of paper out? Well, you know, it's a lot easier if they just make that pile next to their desk at the beginning of class, you know, and it's a simple thing that I can do for them that just helps class run more smoothly. And it's just, sure. I mean, that's a thing where, I want to have high expectations, but I want to have realistic expectations too.
Yes,
you know? And I think exactly. The expectation is I'm going to do this for you. Okay, I'm going to have this list of what you're going to need. I'll be prepared. I'm going to model being prepared for you. And you put that pile together. And then I expect you, when it gets to be when we need the journal, that you just reach down really quick and class rolls along smoothly. You know, that's the expectation that I have. And I think, you know, it's a combination of that modeling and it's a combination of that or of showing that kind of that give and take. You know, I'm willing to give you this list if you're willing to use it. That kind of thing.
You had a nice, kind of a addendum, I guess you'd call it, to a post there on your, you know, your tools for learning, whatever it's called, with your digital learning devices, DLDs, and that really showed not only your learning, but also how you're helping the students kind of learn along the way. And, you know, that's right. Let's face it, the world is full of rules. You know, stop at the red light. You know, pay your taxes by this day. Vote on this day. This, you know, helping students see what the rules are and learning to abide by them, that's also a responsibility.
Yep.
You know, you'd ask anyone on the street, that's what they want students to be able to do, is to be responsible and to abide by rules and figure out which rules are worth living by, which ones you can actually break and not, you know, not get in trouble for, all those things. So I think that's great. I think that's great.
And I think the other thing, too, is that students are involved to an extent in that rule-making process. You know,
sure.
The blog post that you're referring to talked about I'm using cell phones in my classroom now, and so one decision that I made was that we're going to treat those cell phones just like every other tool. And I had that conversation with my students today, is that I said, it's not going to be, as soon as you get in the room, put your cell phone on your desk anymore. It's going to be just like a pencil. If you don't, you know, if we're not using it, it's in your binder. If we're going to get it out, if we're going to use it that day, it'll be in the list of stuff that you need. You know, I ask them, is that an expectation that I can have for you? Do we agree that that's a reasonable expectation for you? And, you know, there are some who said, well, I should keep it on, that way it'll be quick. And what about when we leave? Do we need to turn it off? And what about other teachers? And they wanted to get a blanket. They wanted to use me as a blanket excuse to have it on all the time. And we talked about that, you know, but it's a little bit of give and take. You know, but you need to be modeling those high expectations. So
you're having those critical conversations.
Exactly.
If I could use a buzzword.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think I don't know. Kind of wrap up our conversation here a little bit on student responsibility. It seems like we're agreeing on some common themes, even though we teach different levels of students, and that's help having students kind of be involved in that responsibility. And realizing that students, even at different, you know, 6th grade, 12th grade, whatever, that they are going to be at different levels as well.
Yes.
You know, what other themes are you seeing here, Russ?
Those are the two that I planned on highlighting as well, Matt. I think that's, you know, what's interesting is that's learning. I mean, that's teaching.
Yeah.
It's recognizing individual differences, meeting kids where they are, and having high expectations.
Yep.
And finding different paths to those high expectations. I mean, that's what teaching and learning is.
And I think the modeling thing kind of goes right along with
that.
I heard you say the word modeling several times, and you know, that's what we're there to do too. We're supposed to be, you know, we are lifelong learners, so that our students will become lifelong learners. And I think that's what it's all about. So
definitely. All right, we are getting into a little bit over 30 minutes, so let's get after these 3-minute gut checks. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Oh jeez. I'll let you go first. You are just chomping at the bit right now. Ready for this? You got the timer ready, Russ?
I feel like I got a good gut check.
Are you got the timer ready?
I will set my timer here. All right, Matt, here is your gut check for tonight. It is 10 years in the future, 2020.
Oh, geez.
2020. What in education looks unrecognizably different? And what looks unbelievably similar?
Okay. Well, holding up the clock now. Okay. I really think that we are still going to be in buildings. I really do. I really think that we're still going to be in buildings. I think that's going to be unrecognizably familiar. Students are still going to be coming to school. They might be riding their own mopeds or something. There might be no longer school buses. But I really think students are still going to be going to buildings. I also think that students are still going to be learning some of the same things. So I'm saying that some of the content, I don't know what that content is still going to be the same. You know, I look back from eons ago, and there still is this core content that exists in American public education today. You know, as I've studied one graduate class, I'll admit it, on the history of American education, there are some common themes. What I think, though, amongst the content is that the content itself is going to be shifted, if that makes any sense. You know, I think once upon a time, algebra may have been seen, for example, as a terminal math area. I think algebra could be considered a fifth grade topic. And calculus is going to be the norm. I really think there's going to be a shift in content. I think that the one thing that's going to look undeniable, it's just going to look so wild and different, is the use of digital tools. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I really think, you know, with one-to-ones and all those types of initiatives, you know, iPod touches, I think it's going to look totally different. I really think that there's going to be just this huge curve. Sometime it's going to happen where the funding's going to be there, the paradigm shift is going to be there, so that the tools are going to be so crazy different. You know, I don't think that even, you know, 20 years ago you would have seen any students at all using computers for more than, you know, 20 minutes a day. And so I think that they're going to be using them so much more. I can't guarantee that they're going to be learning any different. That's what I think is another one of those things that's going to be the same. Today I've only been teaching 5 years. 10 years from now, I'm going to be 15 years into it. But what about the people that have currently been at 10 or 15 years? They're going to be 30 years in it. What's going to happen between now and then to help their attitudes towards education change? I don't know. I'd like to think something, but I don't think there's going to be a big, you know, a big paradigm shift there. I'd like to say that school lunch is going to change, but I don't know. I really don't know.
Some of it should stay the same, though.
Okay.
Chili, cinnamon rolls.
Chicken. Yeah, I can go for some good chicken nuggets if they're good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe students will be paying with debit cards and they won't have lunch accounts anymore. They'll literally be paying with debit cards or PayPal or whatever it may be. I'd like to also think that the role of school administrators would be changing. Maybe that's a topic we can dive into at a later time. But man, I tell you, with only 3 seconds left, I better stop. I better stop and not go into that any farther.
Well done. That was a good gut check.
Oh my! I was not expecting that. That was wow. But appropriate. Very
good.
Appropriate.
All right.
All right. For your 3-minute gut check, am I allowed to give like a precursor to this 3-minute gut check? All right. All right. So the Russ Garand I know is all about lifelong learning. Isn't that the title of your blog, like learning lifelong learning or something like that? Okay. Learning is life. That's it. Learning is life. I remember it now. Okay. So you're all about learning is life, and you're all about the difference between, you know, teaching and learning. Okay. But at the same time, there's this Russ Garand that's like, you know what? I'm not going to assign homework. I'm going to be this first year teacher that does not assign homework. Okay. So you want students to learn all the time, right? I mean, yeah. And you think that they shouldn't be taking home stuff. Okay. So looking maybe to your future, how do you reconcile those two differences? How do you expect students to be learning all the time outside of class, but at the same time, not necessarily being required to do it? So it's kind of like this mix between, I want you to learn outside of class, but I'm not going to require what you learn. But at the same time, we've got this certain learning that has to happen. How do you reconcile those two philosophical differences for our experienced teachers and even for our newer teachers out there? 3 minutes. You got the clock. Go ahead.
Well, Matt, first of all, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to step up on one of my many soapboxes. I very much appreciate that tonight.
Yeah.
Here is what, and this is what I try to do with any of these homework debates that I get into, okay? The first thing that has to happen is a definition, a common definition of what we're talking about with homework. And what I mean by homework, when I say that I don't give homework, okay, is I'll give you an example. Kids come in to my social studies class still, and they will ask, do we have homework tonight? This is just as the bell rings to start class. Do we have homework tonight? My answer is always, I don't know. Because if you don't get done by because you're messing around or not paying attention or doing something else, if you don't get done with what we are doing in class, then yes, you will have work to do at home. However, what I do not do is I don't do 2 seconds left in class. Okay, before you leave, make sure you grab the worksheet sitting on the table on your way out. That's what you do tomorrow. You know, that's what you do tonight. We'll talk about it tomorrow, probably for 2 seconds. You know, I don't do those kinds of things. So how do I reconcile this whole idea of always learning without giving specific, you know, worksheet-based learning?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll give you an example. I wrote a blog post about this the other day. I had and a colleague who is somewhat active on Twitter and follows these kind of conversations said something to me actually after school about how great this was. I have two students who've really, 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 almost strangely enough, taken to our classroom blog. They have both commented on every single post. We're talking about 200 posts here. They've commented on every single post. Recently, they were going back and forth on a post, and they wanted to have a new conversation. The conversation was literally over that they were having, and the one said to the other one, "What should we talk about now?" And the other one said, "Let's talk about the Christmas Day bomber." Okay. And I, at that point, I wrote in and I just said, hey, you guys can feel free to start a new post if you want. Take the conversation there. So that student, in his own, started a whole new post, open thread, conversation, or the Christmas Day bomber, dropped a few links in. They started reading those links, going back and forth, talking about this. I mean, that is, they were motivated to learn because they felt comfortable in that environment, for one thing. They knew that, you know, they had someone else there to learn with them. And that's what I want. I just want to be a facilitator of those opportunities. You know, that's what I want. I've got this space, which is our blog, and I want, you know, the kids to feel comfortable always learning there. And I know that's, you know, that's 3 minutes, but that's basically how it starts, is getting the kids to want to do it, as opposed to getting me hoping they end up doing it.
Yeah, we have to expand upon that. I know your time's up here. We have to expand upon that in a future podcast. I may challenge you again on some of those thoughts. I think you're off to the right start, and I think, you know, really, that framework right there, I think we could all learn from. You know, been in the classroom for a year, been in the classroom for 10 years. You know, that framework is one really to follow there. Wow, it's hard to believe. Hard to believe that that can't even be reconciled. Let me tell you.
All right, so any final thoughts before we take off for the night?
I think it's been a great episode here. You know, we've had a bigger following, you know, more followers on Twitter, even a few more subscribers on our blog. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes now. Click on the link over there, withstudentsinmind.blogspot.com. Definitely give us feedback. You know, if you think the 1-2-3 is a poor format, tell us. If you think it's awesome, if you think... we talk about terrible topics, let us know. If you think it's great, you liked, you know, the 3-minute gut check. If you want to be a guest, you know, if someone wants to be a guest, let us know. We are looking to line up a few guests for future episodes here. Right now we've been going doing podcasts on a monthly basis. We'll see how that goes. Maybe we'll pony it up and go 2 a month later on as we get going. But, hey, I don't know. We'll see. As time allows, I know LBG's on the way. We'll see how that affects your life for us, too. We're doing podcasts monthly, so probably expect another one in the month of February. Any closing thoughts for you, Russ?
It was a good time. I'd be interested to know if people can tell that we did this one over Skype. It's just something interesting to me to wonder. Did the first one face-to-face sitting at the kitchen table, and I just wonder if there was any lag or anything anything you could tell the difference. The other thing is, Matt, another great conversation. Love that we can have these conversations all the time. It's fun to capture some of them. some of them and share it out with the public. Again, just like I just want to echo what Matt said, we're looking for your feedback, guys. We really, Matt and I have these conversations every day, so the reason that we record them and publish them out is to involve you guys and hope that hope you've got something something to share back with us.
All right, let's put a wrap on it, Russ. Together we are here
with students in mind.
Have a good one.